Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With us today is Daniel McAdams, our host and co-host. Daniel, you're the host today.
No, I don't want to be.
Okay.
You are.
Well, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Paul.
We need you. I think maybe we'll switch it around.
No. So, we're going to talk about conflict.
Yes. We've been talking about this
yeah.
for several days. And, you know, when you think about when we started our program several years ago, foreign policy was on the top of our list, and
yeah.
we talked about it routinely. And that's not to believe that the world all of a sudden has become peaceful and wonderful and no worries. It's been smoldering because our domestic ridiculous programs, you know, with the virus and lockdown, that's been a war in itself, and it continues. So that's occupied a lot of our time. But looking at the worldwide events, things look rather dangerous, and there's a lot more talk about wars being prepared for. And an article that really got me started on this was somebody indicating a two-pronged attack. We
yeah.
have to be prepared. And all of a sudden, you know, it comes together. Yeah, you know, we got to blame the Russians. We got to blame the Chinese.
Yeah.
We got to, we have to secure our territory in Ukraine. We can't give up any territory in Ukraine. I mean, we won that fair and square with a perfectly legitimate coup.
Yeah.
So we have that could be concerned about. But also, and Trump was involved in this one, especially aggravating countries and moving their ships in, both
yeah.
against Russia and China. You know, the big thing in China right now is Taiwan.
Yeah.
And that goes all the way back to Kimoi Matsu,
mm-hmm.
you know, back in the Kennedy-Nixon fight. Who owns it? Who's going to defend it? Should we go? Should Americans die for it? Two little postage stamps islands that, you know, in reality doesn't worth much, but strategically and symbolically and politically, it's a big deal. So that is building up too. And I wished I could say it's all those other bad guys' fault. It's China. If we just didn't have China around, if we just didn't have Russia around, they're the bad guys. But then there's others say that, our policy aggravates them. You know, and precipitates these disagreements and these anger, you know, breaks out. I think it's very, very dangerous because events can linger and smolder. And now, why do you think we need to? I think I know your answer. But why do you think we need to have aircraft carriers in the Black Sea?
Yeah.
You know, and I found that one thing I learned from this is we can't go into the Black Sea without getting permission from Turkey,
yeah.
from an old treaty.
Yeah.
So they have something to say about that if anybody cares about international law. And it is a strategic area, but
yeah.
why don't we, well, I guess I know, but why don't we just be a little more peaceful and go in and out of there and go fishing or something, you know, and work it out. But anyway, I think there's a lot of hot spots out there. We dealt a lot with Ukraine when the coup was occurring,
yeah.
and the conditions haven't gotten any better. And we'd think maybe they'd change a little bit with the administration changes. But we've also argued the case that the foreign policy overall, the broad foreign policy, monetary policy, spending policy, they're the same no matter who you have in as president. You have a lot of fighting going on but for social matters and some of this cultural stuff. But when it comes to the big items of spending and debt and foreign policy, policies don't really change. We just keep marching on. I guess the best defense I could have for that argument is, how long have we been in Afghanistan? We're supposed to leave there. Oh, no, it's a good war. We have to stay there. And even now, May 1st is cropping up real soon. Are we going to be out like Trump had planned us to be out for May 1st? And my prediction there is that we will be there after May 1st. So I just hope that some sanity could come to this. And there's a few people on our side on this issue, but they're terrified of thinking that that we're too weak and unpatriotic if we take a position of minding our own business, because we got to be tough and we have to be ready and we have to take care of our business people. We have to make sure the prophets of the war machine, the war profiteers, they'd be very unhappy if they weren't making a lot of money. So the whole effort of the military-industrial complex is a powerful in us promoting this type of a policy, which I consider very dangerous.
It is. You know, it's funny, in your opening you said, what would happen if China and Russia didn't exist? I think the military-industrial complex would have to invent them if they didn't
That's
exist.
Right.
You know, because it gives the entire justification for, and you saw this a few days ago, Biden's announcing a huge increase, significant increase in military spending for the next year. So this is something that keeps giving. It's something that keeps Washington. You think that we got a little stimulus check? Well, some people did. Washington lives on stimulus checks, and they're in the billions rather than the thousands. But, you know, the justification that Secretary of State Blinken gives to, for his bellicose, and he was in again over the weekend talking about it, comments about China and Russia, are we have got to protect our allies, Taiwan and Ukraine. But what's interesting is we always have the right to protect our allies everywhere, but no one else seems to have that same right. You know, I think there are about 600,000 Russian citizens living in eastern Ukraine. Doesn't Russia have a legitimate interest in protecting those citizens? And there is a significant portion of the residents of Taiwan, it's not a majority, but who would rather have closer relations to China and might even favor unification with China. So this whole idea that we're the only ones allowed to have interests in the rest of the world and everyone else has to, you know, back down or do whatever we say. But I think that's coming to an end, and I think this pushing is hastening that. And it may be tied, you might probably say it may be tied to a dollar collapse.
Yeah, that is of course the big concern. But the one other point in history that makes your point, and that is in the Middle East. How many people have we talked to or read about where they talk about the Middle East before World War One?
Yeah.
You know, actually, you know, it was well known that Christian Jews and the Muslims got along pretty well,
yeah,
at times better than ever. But now, boy, I'll tell you what, in Palestine and Christians being treated over there and worldwide, and
yeah,
and the mess we have. And so the animosity is great after we've been there, but we've had 100 years, that is the West, that is Europeans and Americans, over there trying to solve these problems. That's why we're not going to be any more successful dealing with the rest of the area. And this whole thing on Afghanistan,
yeah,
is just utterly amazing that, yeah, I think it was the... Who was it? The French were making a statement about that, and they talk a whole lot about it, but they really don't accomplish anything, and it's still going to exist. So, Daniel, it's back to our overall principle and what we're trying to do here: try to distinguish, define, and promote a foreign policy which is different than what the Democrats and Republicans and a lot of libertarians, and they just think it's automatic intervention. You got to do it. You got to protect your power. You've got to protect your dollar. And they say, well, Russia's not that powerful. Really, it isn't. It's not like the Soviet system.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we have to prevent it from happening. So in a way, we're already doing what you made fun of. We almost have created,
yeah,
our enemies, because I know we spend more money than Russia and China put together. We spend more than, you know, 10 countries, the top 10 countries. And so we should be the most powerful. But we are, that does not give us the moral high ground in everything that we do. You wonder how in the world could the Afghans still exist after centuries of outsiders coming in. But they always have the moral high ground. It's their homeland, and they don't want people there. Their basic principle is, we just want to be left alone. We like our lifestyle here. And they don't win, but they win by not being destroyed and having the occupation last forever. And this is an admission that the American people don't want to come to, that we lost the goal of occupying and turning Afghanistan into making them look like Washington, D.C. or New York. You know, maybe they don't want to look like that.
Yeah, well, they're not allowed to not be like us. But, you know, the... this is not certainly to denigrate the soldiers, but as Colonel McGregor, our good friend, would say, it is the politicized officer class. After 20 years, haven't been able to even defeat the Taliban. You know, a group of people, as you point out, you know, they don't have the most modern equipment. A lot of them don't even have shoes. But, you know, the U.S. military is too busy preaching cultural Marxism to the soldiers. I would put a bet out there that the Taliban are, as you say, fighting for their homeland. They're not having sensitivity training to their soldiers. They're not preaching critical race theory to their soldiers. They're not offering free gender reassignment surgeries to their soldiers. They're actually fighting for the homeland, and these are all the things that the U.S. military is doing and why probably it can't and hasn't been able to win a war. But let's just put out some examples of what we're talking about. Let's just look at three tweets here. This is what we're talking about with Blinken and with the saber rattling here. Well, we don't have them yet. We're getting them ready over there. But Secretary Blinken was on Meet the Press, I think it was, over the weekend, and he was talking about, and here it is, here's Meet the Press. Secretary Blinken has real concerns about Russia's actions on the borders of Ukraine. Here's Blinken. The question is Russia going to continue to act aggressively and recklessly? If it does, the president's been clear, there'll be costs, there'll be consequences. And move on to the next one. Here he's now, he's going on about China. Blinken warns it would be a, quote, serious mistake for Taiwan's status to be changed by force. And then the third one. This is just one weekend for Blinken. Blinken warns of China's increasingly aggressive actions against Taiwan. And I picked this one out, Dr. Paul. You probably want to comment. It's our ships that are going through the strait and acting aggressively, yet in Blinken's mind, it's all China's fault.
Well, it reminds me of what happens in Washington, D.C., and the political parties fighting each other. So if one party is absolutely guilty of all the shenanigans in the Department of Justice and abusing the rights of the voters and all this, they're very, very efficient in turning it around. The more harm they have come and the more violation one party has created, they turn around and say the other party and just keep blaming them. And that's about what we do on foreign policy here. We're the ones that's in 150 countries. Yeah. We're the ones that have caused the human rights violations around the world when we go in and so many civilians die with us occupation. So it's something that we just turn around and say that they did it, and then they're on the defensive. But that happens all the time. It's almost, and I think a lot of people come to this belief, and I think this was a saying with the Russian people during the Soviet system, is they never believed what the government was saying.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a joke.
They
it turned
smart.
Into a real joke, and I laughed about it. And I think it's getting that way now. So I guess that example of even our Marines aren't listening. It's time for you to take your vaccine.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
People are maybe starting to think for themselves, but it's dangerous here. It's dangerous around the world, too.
Well, you know, I mentioned McGregor earlier, and he has a piece in the American Conservative. We have a little excerpt on RonPaulInstitute.org website about it. And he, you know, he's not into bloviating. He's not into puffing himself up. He's into looking with a cold, steely-eyed glance at what the reality is. And I would encourage people to take a look at this article because he points out the fact. The fact is that if conflict breaks out between Russia and Ukraine over eastern Ukraine, and again, there are a lot of Russian citizens living in eastern Ukraine, if it breaks out, all of this Tony Blinken going on about how we're going to protect our ally pretty much is going to run headlong into reality. And here's just a little excerpt that he points out. If Russian military power prevails, and he believes that it would over Ukraine, which is a far inferior army, President Biden's promise of support means U.S. or allied NATO ground forces may intervene to rescue Ukrainians from defeat. And here's what it means in reality. In Europe, U.S. Army and Marine ground forces are too weak to intervene 500 miles east of the Polish border. It's not enough of them, even if reinforced in a timely manner by armored brigades. None of NATO's ground forces are ready to cope with Russia's BM-30 Schmerz rocket artillery formations. Rockets fired from these formations, just five of the ones that they have, can devastate an area the size of New York City Central Park, 843 acres in minutes. So they have the advantage, they have the home field advantage literally over there. And he also talks about the S-500 air defense system, and nobody knows how good it is. It's certainly the latest thing that's out there. Would we want to start sending some F-35s that can barely fly in the face of this? So he says the reality on the ground is the U.S. has no ability and certainly no intention of following through with these threats.
And if they don't want to listen to the politics, they ought to listen to the practical efforts of a military. It doesn't make any sense, but morally it doesn't make any sense either. You know, how does a world solve these kind of problems? And they talked about a lot, both in World War I and II, and Roosevelt was a promoter of this, that where there's a dispute, we believe in self-determination. You know, let the people decide. Yeah. And, you know, in a civilized society, that would probably work and could work. But I don't think we live in that society. We have not advanced that far. But self-determination makes a lot of sense. It has a libertarian message there that let the people decide what they want to happen. But we certainly didn't think about that in 1861, that maybe self-determination would help save about 800,000 Americans, yeah, you know, from dying in a war that would continue to have ramifications for the next 100 years plus. And a referendum is something. What would happen if we had a referendum in Ukraine? You've already pretty good hint what would happen.
Yeah, yeah.
If there were a referendum and say, look, do you want to go with East or West? You love NATO and you love the United States. You can go over here and we're going to do this. But if you're more comfortable being with the Russians, you can live here and have an adjustment and saying everybody can go and live with the group they want, and you get to make the choice, and nobody should be impeded from picking which side they want to go to.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, that isn't the issue. The issue is more strategic. Who has the oil? Who has the power? And what is NATO going to do? And how are they going to combat the Russian missiles? Because the Russians are, you know, they used to be very ruthless, and they'd start wars. So we have to be prepared. So that they're not going to allow that, but it would be. So I guess it'd be nice if we could wait on. Why don't you people be more civilized? Why don't you have an election or let your people vote? Because if you're Russian and you want to be a Russia, and there's a pretty neat geographic line to draw, why couldn't they let Crimea be Russia? Well, it looks like the people did speak,
yeah,
and they had
vote.
Their own. Well, matter of fact, they actually did have a referendum.
They did vote, yeah.
They had a vote.
Yeah.
And that was why there was a coup, because the country had voted to go along with Russia,
yeah,
and they wouldn't accept it. So that's tragic. And, of course, the best we can do is try to understand it best and get people to understand why they should be alert to it, because we don't need a war in Europe or any place. I don't quite think, I fear the next war or any war, but I don't think the tanks are going to roll in. You know, 500,000 troops,
yeah,
marching across Europe. I may be wrong on that, but I'm more fearful of a technological war and a biological war and all the kind of things now that are modern that are going to be a lot harder to deal with. Blowing up nuclear power plants,
yeah,
and things like that.
Well, you know, they did have the vote in Crimea, but the U.S. doesn't recognize it because it said, well, that wasn't a fair vote because there are Russian troops in Crimea. Well, Russian troops have always been in Crimea. They were there legally, you know, but lying is really part of Washington's style. But, you know, there is some indication that Ukraine is backing down, and this is from via Moon of Alabama, which is pretty good on this stuff. But they write, I think today or yesterday, that on April 9th, via Ria Novosti, the head of the Ukrainian military, Ruslan Komchak, said Ukraine has ruled out the use of force to retake Donbass. And he says it's for humanitarian reasons, because they don't want so much lives lost. And Zelensky, the president, has announced a need for a new truce. So there is some indication, and who knows whether Washington said, hey, guys, you better back down because this is looking ugly. Or, as Moon of Alabama wonders, maybe it's a ruse because everyone is seeing the movement of Ukrainian military toward the border. Maybe this is a ruse. to get people to think they're not going to attack. But whatever the case, there is some indication that they're backing down a little bit.
You know, in reading about this, I came across a comment made by a journalist that was making the point, yes, it has something to do with U.S. power, but that's not the real reason. There's a moral issue here. It's because they want to do something very, very worthwhile, and that is to prevent Russia from getting power.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're assuming that Russia would automatically then have nuclear weapons and threaten us again. So it's a prevention. That makes us in a position of saying that we know what's best for the world and we're going to manage the world. But the whole thing is it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
That makes the conditions much worse and more likely to give the Russians an incentive to do exactly what they did. They respond. They move their troops in a certain way to show that they're not going to be pushed around. And yet they justify it. That same article talked about the dollar, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Because economically speaking, if it looks like we can't maintain this power and we don't have this control, maybe they won't use the dollar as a reserve currency. And that's a possibility that might come regardless because of the way we're printing money, which is unbelievable what they're doing with the printing of money. So we will lose that eventually. But they were actually admitting that it's a prevention effort to keep Russia from exerting anything to show that they might retaliate. At the same time, we have to protect our economic interests. But how often do you hear that saying that we got to invade that country and they're going to pay for it? We're going to take their oil and they're going to pay for it.
Yeah. Well, the third front that we're talking about, because we're wondering, is it going to be two fronts or a three-front war? Let's look at this next. This is the tweet that we found. I think this was embedded in a Zero Hedge piece. But it lays it out pretty well. Israel has been very active in trying to stir up conflict in the Middle East over the last few weeks and months. But here's what one tweet says. In the past few days, Israel has reportedly mined an Iranian ship in the Red Sea, launched airstrikes in Syria, launched out a cyber attack against an Iranian nuclear program. He said this is a shadow conflict that increasingly looks like it's spilling into the daylight. And this really is, Israel is very, very clear. They do not want the U.S. to return to the JCPOA. They do not want to return to the Iran deal. And in fact, I think the head of their military or their intelligence is in Washington lobbying the Biden administration against keeping this promise that he made when he was running. But the attack on Natanz is particularly bold, and they're not ashamed to admit it, really, that they've done it, but it's also incredibly reckless if you think about an attack on a nuclear facility and the possibility of spreading radiation problems, of contaminating the earth. So it's a very bold and reckless move. Israel's definitely on the move in the Middle East. They're worried about how things look, and I think that's possibly the third front.
I don't think Israel is as conniving as people might think. They're almost more honest about it, and they're open.
Yeah.
If they go into Syria, they want to show their strength, and they have done this too when some nuclear scientists have been killed in Iran. They've taken credit for it, and so they're not going to back off from that. And right now, Iran vows revenge to Israel.
Yeah.
So that whole fight, which has been going on for a long time, which we have done nothing but aggravate that.
Yeah.
You talk about aggravating things with Russia and China right now. How long have we been aggravating that whole thing with Iran? Yeah, but the people, probably a few people that are watching our show right now, in Iran, you can't trust Iran, so therefore we have to do this. But they're vying, they're promising revenge, for this. And in a way, aren't they justified to do it? But it never stopped.
Yeah.
But really, the big issue, and we've mentioned this day for so many times, in 1953,
yeah,
first early years when I started getting interested in this subject of foreign policy, and that's where Madosi, the president there, was an MD,
Mossadegh. Yeah, yeah.
He was kicked out of office. It was our start on coups, I guess,
yeah,
and of course they remember that. I always say, Americans have short memories, and people in the Middle East never forget. Yeah. You know, and it's foolish for us to think that we're going to convert them, and they're going to live like we want, and they're never going to forget how many people died and this sort of thing. So it's very tragic. That's why the more I look at it, even if I started way back in 1953, I didn't understand exactly how it could be worked out, because it was natural to be very patriotic and support the war efforts and things yeah. like this. But it is everything I read about and study and try to understand, the stronger I get on the benefits of a non-interventionist foreign policy, believing that it truly could work, but it can't work in an immoral society. Yeah. You say, well, you can't change the morality of the people. Of course, that's what Adams and other founding fathers were considered by. Yes, you have a republic, but it's not going to mean anything if you don't have morality with the people.
Yeah.
So it is a tough call, but the best we can do, and I've used this so often over the years, is the best we can do if we want people to live differently with some moral standards is that we have to set a good example.
Yeah.
If you want people, you know, for instance, this is a little bit more objective. If you want to teach people not to have fiat money, why don't you practice what you preach and do it? And maybe people would want to emulate us. In our early history, I think that was the case. We were working on experiment, more liberty, emphasis on individuals, and other countries wanted to, but that didn't work out. So I don't think we have the authority, the power, the ability to go in and teach China how to live, or teach the Iranians how to live, or the Afghans how to live. But we do have a moral responsibility and a greater ability to influence what the people here are doing. And I think I wanted to always limit my political responsibilities to here.
Yeah.
And it's also why right now I keep up with a little old program like the Freedom Report, and I have homeschooling to try to get people to understand what the correct ideas are, so that that is what will eventually change our country. Right now, we're in a moral crisis. We're talking all about these bombs and missiles and yeah. making mistakes in war, but really, what's happening in this country is probably the greater problem that we're facing now is a moral crisis and the rejection of some of these principles. When you think of what's happened to the judicial system
yeah.
and all that's gone on in the political system, it's just an outrage. And I think our conditions are going to get much worse if that is not addressed. And many people have mentioned, and I believe it's true, that it isn't just our social culture here. It's probably Western civilization that's being challenged right now.
Yeah.
And it's being substituted by you know, a Marxist type of system, which has been around for a long time as well.
Yeah. Well, do you want to just do an update really quick on, because we talk a lot about the vaccines. Let's put up this next clip. This just happened this morning, and we don't know what to make of it. But the U.S. calls for a pause on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine due to deadly blood clots. So they're not giving out the Johnson & Johnson shots, at least right now. And they had a press conference this morning where they explained a little bit about what's going on with it. And, you know, on RonPaulInstitute.org website, Adam Dick, with RPI, has a good piece I encourage people to have a look at. He's kind of speculating, you know, he's wondering out loud, because the J&J is more like a conventional vaccine, which gives you a little protein from the virus and causes you to have a reaction to it. He was wondering, is maybe this is a regulatory bias against that and in favor of the mRNA jabs, which aren't really technically vaccines.
Yeah, and if you didn't have any more information than that, and people looked at it and they understood what the new vaccines are like, and it's really a test.
Uh-huh.
They won't admit this, that, and sometimes it's referred to as a bunch of guinea pigs out there. and the whole idea, when you realize that they're just experimenting, is why give the kids who right now aren't even threatened, and putting these injections in them, and that's the RNA type of vaccine. So I would think people with common sense might prefer the J&J, but others with common sense might say, I'm not taking anything.
Yeah.
Balancing that with good common sense, that's why you don't want bureaucrats and politicians making decisions.
Yeah.
We have these ideas, and we say individuals are, they're messing up their lives, they're doing dumb things, we need people to take care of them. So we pick a few of them, put them in the government, and then they make bad mistakes
for,
and for everybody at once. So why don't we say, yes, the individuals have to make the decision, but the only thing that can help them make it is information. And right now, the information is so messed up, especially with this conflict on First Amendment rights and why people get they get canceled out.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Book burning essentially is going on now. So that's a great threat to us too.
Yeah, that's a good point, that people should be able to assess their risk. If you are older and you know you're at a higher risk of COVID, you may want to say, hey, I may take the shot because I know I'm in a category. But if you're in a lower category and you look at some possible side effects, you might say, I'm going to wait for a little while. But I'm going to close out with a couple of things because we're getting long-winded over here with all of our stuff we're dealing with. But I just thought this is a funny one because if you look at the last one, we've got to stop the Johnson & Johnson. It's got blood clots. It's dangerous. Let's look at the next clip. Here's just a month ago. Here's old Fauci. I would definitely take the Johnson & Johnson shot. So there he goes again, always with his foot in his mouth. I do want to close with this, though. Here is some propaganda paid for by you and me and the rest of our viewers. Involuntarily, HHS.gov. Let's put that next one up. Here's, I don't know what these three people are, but it says, there are some new forms of the coronavirus, but a snug mask, 6 feet of space, and avoiding crowds protects against them too. We'll get vaccinated when it's our turn, but now more than ever, we're on it. And then underneath it says, COVID isn't letting up, and neither are we. That's kind of weird. It's not letting up, because let's look at this next clip. Because unless I'm really bad at reading charts, it kind of looks like it's letting up. If you look there, I mean, it absolutely makes no sense. But this is state, this is government propaganda paid for by us, aimed at scaring people. Even when the numbers are getting better, it says it's not letting up, it's not letting up, when in fact it is letting up. So this is what's been happening for a year.
You had something up there on Dr. Fauci.
Yes.
And, I would have to say that you were making fun of him.
It was very rude.
But you know, one thing that we look for and we think is a powerful tool is showing hypocrisy.
Yeah.
This has been very effective, and we may even get a couple governors kicked out of office.
Yes.
Because they're such hypocrites. But there are so much hypocrisy. But that's pretty true with most politicians. I had thought at one time that when you're running for office, that you're under oath.
Yeah, that would be a good idea.
Yeah, put them under oath, and then they'll look. But when I look at this last clip on Fauci, I would say, is he just being hypocritical? No, this was long ago. I think sometimes he's hypocritical, but this was more being dumb. You know, what a shame. So I was defending the principle of non-intervention in foreign policy. I believe in it strongly, but I believe in it across the board. I think government non-intervention with a very strict control of government being there to protect our liberty so that we can make our own mistakes and make our own decisions, I think the world would be a better off. But to legitimize the individuals who are making mistakes, which is most of us, and send them to Washington so they can make mistakes for everybody, and it becomes the law of the land if you don't behave, we're going to punish you, and we're at that point now. So I don't think our problems are complex, and I think that's what just drives them all nuts, is that what we're asking for, just our freedom and just the legitimacy of taking care of ourselves and declaring that we have self-ownership, that we can do with our lives what we want. If we promise that we don't hurt people, don't steal from people, and don't kill people. A matter of fact, it's just that one rule would be enough to provide for the peace and prosperity that they want. It's too simple. What would you do with the bureaucrats? At one time, many, many years ago, I was asked, I said, when I would talk about, well, we close this down, this down, this down, what would the people do? Where would the jobs come? They're making a lot of money. I said, well, maybe they could go work at McDonald's or someplace, get a job. And that is the whole thing, is the jobs are out there, freedom is there, but people have to be willing to assume the responsibility for themselves. But it's much more easily to demand and get especially when there's unlimited spending, unlimited printing presses, and unlimited gullibility in the belief that our dollar is going to last forever. And that's not true. And people should prepare for this. And for me, I think the most important thing I do is contribute the best I can to the cause of liberty, getting people to understand it and why you don't have to have more government to solve the problem that government had created itself. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.